All right, let's go. You're rolling with Jason and John, 929 FM ESPN on a Tuesday. Lots to discuss on this Tuesday, September 30th edition of the show. We had a couple of Monday night football games that involved some really bad teams last night. And as a result, the lone undefeated team left in our 929 FM ESPN Fantasy League as a result of the bad teams that were playing. Dang you, Jake Browning! Show some pride. I got things to say about the Bengals, Ja'Marr Chase. Now, we're not a Bengals show, but that's what it boiled down to last night in a couple of games that, I mean, I guess out of that mess, you want to pick Denver as a team that may end up being the team we thought they could be in terms of playoff contender and everything else with that defense. Yeah, that was a positive in terms of NFL developments, but the rest of that mess, the other three teams, boy, it's nasty. And it got even nastier for Miami last night as they lose a star, right, to a season-ending injury that may threaten his entire career. So plenty to talk about from it, but it's going to be an ugly talk in terms of last night's game. My coach, Ben Johnson, regrets how he handled a halftime interview with the Bears at that time, looking like crap at halftime of an eventual win over John's Raiders. That was reality, but John beat me in fantasy. We learned at Grizzlies Media Day that Brandon Clark underwent that arthroscopic procedure yesterday. So we're looking at 6 weeks, John, before you're able to look at that knee and give it the reevaluation and tell us whether it's time for Brandon Clark to ramp up. In all seriousness, we know. I mean, he's going to be gone for a significant amount of time. Your front court is already thin with Jaren and Zach Edey coming back off surgery as well. You guys may not know this. I know Brad does. Guess I'm talking to John.
Mm-hmm.
Cubs playoff baseball this afternoon. Playoff baseball this afternoon.
I actually missed that as well.
You missed it too,
yeah,
because your Cardinals aren't in it.
I didn't even know what you like. No,
where I was okay. So there's two guys in here that don't realize it's baseball playoffs because they don't have teams. I do. It's the Cubs. Now Buster Olney has already predicted that the Padres, and their unbelievable bullpen are going to take my Cubs down. Remember, it's best of three in the wild card series. So I'll keep you updated as we make it through, and I'll probably bow out. Should the Cubs lose to the Padres, then the updates will stop. But baseball playoffs start today.
Love it.
Get ready.
We got rid of our GM. John Mozeliak is out as of yesterday, and he was bitching about the fact that they've never had to rebuild. And he said, you'll hear about rebuilding tomorrow. And I said, get the hell out of here, John Mozeliak. We're ready for a new general manager.
There you go. He's been the guy for 30 years.
Forever, dude.
And
since Walt Jocketty.
It's time for a change in St. Louis.
It is time.
And we look forward to that.
Good to have you guys.
But yeah, it's good to be here. A winner.
Good to have y'all.
Congrats, John.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, look, at the end of the day, you learn a lot about people, right? When they're sort of in their lowest moment, back against the wall, in the corner, have to win to stay alive. And, you know, was it pretty? Absolutely not. But I think what we learned about Jason's team is that you can't say it's a great one because it allowed it to be pulled down into the molasses.
It's true, we were the Chargers.
You played down to my level.
I did.
And the great ones don't do that.
No,
so I did get a trade request, not from Jason, but from CJ, his co-manager. And we did, he tried to pull a Luka on me.
So his first time CJ's been rejected. John rejected him.
Yeah, he sent me Ramondre Stevenson and Travis Hunter for Travis Etienne.
It was like a Joe Shane attempt, you know what I'm saying?
Throw it out there.
I know the Smith family had their eye on Etienne because I did have him on my bench this weekend, but that was a temporary move.
Mm.
That was just a matchup situation. I thought Benson would have a better day against the Seahawks than he ultimately did.
But, I informed my co-general manager that John likes Etienne. You might want to go after Kamara or Benson.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Because
that's right.
He likes Etienne. That was a bad matchup. And you see, my co-GM is just, he's strong-willed. He's going to do what he wants to do. Got his first rejection. We'll see how he responds.
Now, fantasy is crazy because, like, you know, all it really does is just kind of make you mad.
Yeah.
It just makes you mad because when you lose, you're mad you lost.
Well, I'll tell you what, last night, because it was a grind and everything else, and I'm watching a couple of games that I wouldn't normally watch. It felt like I'm going to be honest with you. It's why I don't miss not, and you may not appreciate where I'm going, but I don't miss not betting.
No, I
because
I
that's what it took me back to.
Absolutely.
I was sweating it out at the end whether Cincinnati's going to be able to get 200 plus yards.
Absolutely.
That's not fun. I don't want, you know, that's, right. And it was a sweat and all that, and it's supposed to be, but that took me back to, okay, this is good. This is why you don't put anything on these games, bro, because you can't handle this stuff.
No, it's, I mean, it's very similar.
That's how I felt last
night.
Mm-hmm.
It really
sweating
is not going to be much different. And, you know, fantasy is like, you know, it's for me, it's worse than betting, because at least with betting, you know, I ultimately make the choice. Mm. You know, do I bet this side? Do I not bet this side, right? Like, in fantasy, I'm forced to field a team. I draft a team that may or may not have been good at the you know, the day of, or may have aged better or worse or whatever, but I have to roll this out, and I have to stand on this.
Yeah, you feel what I'm saying.
But, oh, 100% I do. No doubt about it.
That wasn't fun last night. It's not just because of the loss. It's not fun watching Jake Browning when Cincinnati looks like they've entirely quit in terms of their
team. Your season is dependent on Jake Browning, whether it's your fantasy season or the Bengals season, it's a tough look.
Won games a couple years ago.
He did.
With it.
He
doesn't make any sense.
I am of the belief that if they thought their offensive line was good, if they trusted it, they would go out and trade for a quarterback. But I think they have identified that their offensive line isn't good enough to do that.
Yeah.
And so they're just going to roll with Jake Browning, take their medicine, and not give up any assets. Like, you know, because if you were – I mean, they started 2-0. You know, I mean, they were 2-0 on that. They beat the Jaguars somehow with Jake Browning in the game in the second half, which is kind of nuts. But if they felt like, hey, you know, Jameis is out there, or, you know, all these different backups are out there, we can just go give up a third rounder for him and just, you know, try to hold on with T. Higgins and Jamar Chase and see.
Russell Wilson.
Right. Mm-hmm. Tons of guys out there. But I just feel like they don't believe that. I feel like they believe their offensive line is really bad. It looked like it last night. Most of their yards, I think they like got to like, 150, 160, something
like
that?
Yeah, barely, and that's about what they had last week. So I mean, you had a whole week again with Browning and Jamar and T saying, yeah, we'll be there for you, and you got that mess. Now, and Denver's good defense.
Denver's a great defense, and they were in a desperate situation.
They are.
But, I mean, after that first scripted drive where you gain 57 yards, you only get 100 for the rest of the game. I mean, that's pretty brutal. With those wideouts, I mean, you know, T. Higgins, Jamar Chase, I mean, you're supposed to be able to move the ball much better than they did, even against an elite defense in Denver.
What it said to me is, can you afford to pay the two? Look at the direction you've gone paying those two receivers, and they can't hold you down enough when Burrow is out. You see what I'm saying? That thing is the way they've structured it in terms of who they're paying. They want to be the Eagles, but again, the Eagles got in early in paying those guys. You can't do it that way. You can't pay two like that, especially if they're not going to be able to hold you up when your main guy, your quarterback's out.
Yep.
Like, they've got to be more of a threat than they were last night.
No,
Jamar's taking a little heat. He said he didn't quit or whatever. But
yeah.
It was messy. It was frustrating. You could tell all the players were frustrated. And it looked like by the end of it, none of them believed they could win. It looked like they'd quit.
Well, I mean, in fairness, you know, it was an uphill battle. It probably didn't help Jamar that in the third or fourth quarter, they go to commercial break, and the ESPN cameras have a shot of him on the bench rolling his eyes and his neck with Phil Collins, "Take Me Home" blasting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think.
A couple shots caught him smiling too on the sideline with the grill in and everything else. A couple others, though, so you know, he's barking at his teammates. It's whichever one they picked. You know, you could, you know, take sides on this. Listen, there's no way, you know, playing that game. He dropped a first down pass. It's first and 10. It would have picked him up about 9 yards. He dropped one there late. I mean, this was on him as much as it was on anybody, because Jamar Chase is making those catches 99% of the time. And so, I'm not going to – that's a bad situation. You're right, O-line, it stinks from the ground up. But
yeah.
I'm not going to sit up here and come down all on Jamar, but he was part of the quit last night.
Yeah.
You know, Jefferson's played with just about everybody he's had.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And how many different quarterbacks has Justin Jefferson had?
Kirk, J.J., Carson Wentz, Darnold. Yeah.
Again, and from my vantage point, and listen, they've managed to be good, and that's going to keep you engaged. But he's played. Look how many quarterbacks he's had. Guy gives a professional effort just about every night.
Yep.
That was not one from Jamar Chase.
Right. You're right. No, that they are very. They handle it very. And, you know, it was weird. They've talked about this. Like Jamar said, we don't really talk as much anymore. You know, we were at LSU together and all these things, but we're not really friendly like we used to be because we're getting older. Maybe Jamar should get friendlier with Justin, because that's how you do it. You know, that's how you operate professionally in the NFL, you know, despite circumstances. I'm sure, look, he hates his job right now. He's going through a season, you know, he's like, I can never get my quarterback healthy. You know, I'm out here playing with this bum that's offensive line, but he's also paid very handsomely to do it.
I was going to say.
you know, that could be a lot worse.
100%,
dude. Could be a lot worse.
You got to be a professional, but the entire team, that applies to.
Tyreek Hill was very excited that his career ended last night. I've never seen somebody look so happy to have lost their season and possibly the rest of their career. He must have absolutely hated it down there. That dude was literally clapping and laughing he was getting guarded off.
I'm not going to pretend to try to get inside his head. I just wondered if it was a little bit of reverse psychology instead of, you know, acting like the down guy, trying to be grateful, whatever else, for what he's got. I don't know what that was. It was different. I don't think it was necessarily saying, oh, I got the money. I mean, it can come across that way. I'm not sure that's the message he was trying to put out there. Maybe just the message was, don't feel sorry for me.
Yeah.
You know, this stuff happens it happens all the time. It was, you're right. It stopped me in my tracks in terms of his reaction.
He's throwing his hands up.
I clapped and everything else. Folks are telling him number one. He's saying number one back, and he's smiling, and he's kind of laughing. It's a completely different reaction than you're used to, so much so that I texted my Dolphin friend, T. Shane. I said, man, that was... He seemed to take that well.
Yeah.
But I just wonder, again, if that's a guy trying to handle it differently.
Yeah.
And then behind the scenes, back at the hospital, you hear, I mean, he exploded his knee, basically.
Yep.
Dislocated, tendons torn, ACL gone. And so, you know what, you probably have that moment at the hospital.
Yeah.
You know, those kinds of things.
No, you're right. Yeah, I think it's probably like shock.
I didn't want to just point it to, because I know that's the easy narrative. Narratives can get lazy. Oh, he didn't want to be in Miami last year. Remember, he got a call, and he's happy it's all done. Look at the way he was playing last night. The guy has been locked in since having to come back and tell that locker room, look, I blew it at the end of last season. He was playing like a pro last night. He's the best thing on the field for him. Next to Achan, really ahead of Achan. So he was giving you a professional effort. I hesitate to say that was about, done with Miami.
Yeah.
Because, come on, that guy's career could be over.
No, it likely is.
It's an interesting reaction, though. It really was. It was breathtaking in a way. Never see anything like that.
And that injury was
gruesome.
Ooh. Yeah, they stopped showing it on ESPN. That's
gross.
You know, those are the ones that are bad.
I mean, the foot was just kind of hanging off.
I never went back and watched the Connor one, but my kid did, and they said that one was bad.
James Connor?
Yeah, they said that was one where folks turned away, and they stopped showing replays. So this was of that ilk.
Yeah,
apparently.
Absolutely right. So anyway, it was it was quite the night on Monday Night Football last night, doubleheader. You had two 0-3 teams playing each other. You had, you know, the Bengals without Burrow. It was kind of rough.
Yeah, Justin Fields running around doing what he does. He's an incredible athlete, man.
Yes,
when he is running in the open field, he is a beautiful thing to watch. But when he is fumbling behind the line of scrimmage because he's trying to scramble like he did in that game, he's gonna hurt you. He's gonna kill, you know, with the turnovers.
Yep.
And that's always been the book on him. Aaron Glenn's got an undisciplined team. They are a hot mess, the Jets, right now. You could put them right next to Cincinnati and say this is a boat going nowhere.
Yep, absolutely. So that was last night on Monday Night Football. Here's what we got coming on the show today. Jessica Benson is going to join us on the other side. We'll talk to her about Grizz Media Day and more. And then at 1:25, it's the return of the Mac and ass. Jason Fitz going to join us from Yahoo Sports. Been a while, so we're going to catch up with him on NFL. College football, things that we normally do. Obviously, you know, I remember it was Jason Fitz who was doing game day back when Memphis last got it. He was like the hype man, you know, and he's not that anymore. But, you know, maybe he can give us an idea of whether or not ESPN would be targeting that date for the University of Memphis.
He would know what goes into those things, those decisions, yes.
Yeah, so we'll talk to him about all of that a little bit later today at 1:25. So that is the show today. But we're going to do a little abbreviated version, Brad, of a little thing we call cap or no cap. So let's get it. All right, you learned something from Grizzlies Media Day.
I'll go, that's easy way to go here is cap. I didn't learn anything. I'll go no cap. We did learn yesterday that Brandon Clark had his procedure, and so we can start the follow-up procedure from the offseason that we thought he was going to be able to get healthy in, but obviously was experiencing some synovitis, which I looked up, swelling in the right knee, which required an arthroscopic procedure. The Grizzlies had given us the update. I believe that was on Friday. The procedure occurred yesterday. The point being, you've now got a timeline of 6 weeks from now for reevaluation, which means what you expected, another front court player down for the Grizzlies to start the year. What 6 weeks put us into November?
Mm-hmm.
And so when Brandon Clark, you and I were talking about, you know, how effective is he going to be when he gets back yesterday, it's going to be a minute for Brandon Clark, and you're already shorthanded to start. We talked about it with Jaron and with Edie. And so, we learned that. Procedure's done. Okay, figured that's coming up. Listen, between Isolo and Ja Morant, I don't know that we learned a ton. Mm-hmm. Like, those are two of the guys we were going to with the questions, right? How's this going to look? What's it going to look like? And for the most part, like, Ja was short. If you've seen his quotes, if you got them laid out over at DailyMemphian.com, most of everything he said was short. Hey, I don't need to give you guys anything. The quote about the China trip was cool.
Yep.
You know, I got motion everywhere, whatever it was. I'm paraphrasing. But we didn't learn much. And neither did we with Isolo in terms of the system. You know, Harrington talked about this on with Jeff. Same thing I was looking for. Okay, let's talk about the screens and the pick and rolls, because we know how vital that is to your offense and to a very successful, when we've seen him, Ja Morant. And you didn't get a ton of it. Who we got it from was Landale.
Yep.
Jock Landale telling, that's what I've come here to do. And from that standpoint, it was a confirmation that at least while this time that Edie's going to be gone, you know, you brought Jock Landale in here to be Edie. Now, this is a question that, you know, we brought up to Drew Hill over at the Daily Memphian because we knew it was coming up. Can you play the style that Isolo wants to and Jock be the screen threat, the roll to the basket threat that you're expecting of Edie foundationally? Can he do that in the time being? And to hear Jock basically say, hey, that's what I've been working on. That's what I like to do. Oh, by the way, I'm a defensive guy too. That's what we needed in terms of a confirmation, in terms of a clearing up of some things mm-hmm. here on how Memphis is going to handle this front court deficit to start the year. And while you'd probably say, I can sense it, you know, that ain't a whole bunch of news. You know, for the things that Media Day have become now, when you're asking about, you know, players off season, favorite place to go, favorite food, these are some of the things that I do think stood out in terms of mattering.
Yeah.
Specifically on how you're going to navigate the early season.
Yeah. Okay? I would say for me, the only thing I learned that you know, because the offensive philosophy and all that stuff, we'll have to say on the court, is that Ty Jerome took less to come here, according to, you know, him. So he wanted to play with Tuomas Isolo. That's why he took less. And honestly, that was, you know, it was a very team-friendly contract based on the season that Ty Jerome had, and given the lack of success the Grizzlies have in getting free agents to come here without ties, right? So I thought that was kind of interesting that he identified the Grizzlies in this offense specifically as a place. I don't know who his other offers were from. Maybe they were from bad teams. You know, that's also possible that, yeah, you were getting more money to go to Charlotte or something. Who wants to go to Charlotte? Nobody wants to go there. But I found that interesting. I think he's going to be a big part of this group, man.
Yeah, both on and off the ball.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Ja is going to miss some games. And, you know, historically, the Grizzlies have pretty much always had a good to great backup. It was Tyus Jones for a couple of years, and it was Scottie Pippen Jr., and, you know, now you have lots of options with Ty Jerome. So, yeah, I think it's a great thing, and it speaks, you know, very, very well to, you know, what this could be under Isolo, but we shall see. But yeah, I thought that was kind of the more interesting thing, you know, for Media Day, is that he said he took less to come here. So anyway, yeah, Media Day's in the books. Training camp is underway. I believe Nashville, right? And then we'll have preseason basketball next week. I mean, it's here, right here on 92.9 FM, ESPN. Let's do this. Let's take a break. Let's come back, talk to Jessica Benson. We'll get her thoughts on Media Day, the season, preseason, rest of the NBA, and more. Stick around. Jason and John, I'm trying to fit him, ESPN. Jessica Benson is the host of the Jessica Benson Show with CJ Hurt, catcher on the Grizz Radio Network. She's the Grizz filer. Get ready. She joins us every Tuesday. She joins us now. Are you doing Grizz files again this year?
The Grizz have been filed, all 18 of them yesterday, yes.
You're a grizzophile.
Careful, careful. Yes, did everybody yesterday, which was great. Only person we didn't have was Brandon Clark, because obviously he was out yesterday getting his procedure on his knee. But everyone was awesome. A great year of Grizz Files coming up right on 92.9 ESPN.
That's awesome, man. Another year of being the flagship radio home of the Memphis Grizzlies. All right. You know, Jason and I talked about it. You know, the first day of school, it feels like not a lot of, you know, lessons are doled out, right? Like, everybody's just kind of happy.
No, it's very syllabus-y. Yeah.
But Jason and I still were able to learn some things from the first day of school. What did Jessica Benson learn?
So my media day is such an odd cocoon, right? Because I am doing the Grizz Files, so I'm not as tapped into the press conference that everyone's watching, or we had the Grind City Media live stream all day that the players popped in on. My conversations with the players are more based on who they are as people, their journey that got them to Memphis, kind of where their headspace is at. And so I had a very enjoyable reminder that we have some really great dudes on this team, at least from a standpoint of being effective interviewers and making you be incredibly intrigued by their story and how they got here and the goals that they have for themselves. So then when I got done with the day and went back and kind of took in everything from the outside world of that, I was pleased that it was a relatively quiet media day. I think that's a positive thing. Probably the biggest notable factors would be obviously Jock Landale, from a standpoint of what this fractured Grizzlies front court is going to look like going into the season. And hopefully Jaren's back by opening night, but you know, Zach Edey is not going to be back until at least sometime in November. So who is that starting center opening night? And Jock Landale seems to be someone who wants to make Ja Morant's life easier. And from a big standpoint on the Memphis Grizzlies, that feels like rule number one. So that's a good start. I got the gist that Ty Jerome is gonna play for this team, and he chose to come here and forewent some money in order to come play because he believes in Tomas Isolo's system. And as it pertains to that Tomas Isolo system, you know, as he tries to kind of create the identity of this team and focusing on speed and relentless effort and well-organized and all the buzzwords that we'll eventually see transpire into what's on the court at the preseason opener next week, and once we eventually get to the regular season later this month, or next month, I should say. And then I think like my standout from both my Grizz Files conversations and then the external piece too, Cedric Cowart is just so impressive. Like, I know that we haven't seen him on the court, and there was a very small sample size for him last year at WSU, but from a standpoint of someone who has nailed every single interview he's given since the Grizzlies moved up and drafted him and declared him as their guy, their target that they wanted in the draft, I mean, if he can play at any level close to how he has conducted himself, presented himself, he is someone who could really emerge as a massive piece to elevate the Grizzlies' ceiling this season.
I'm with you, particularly on the Jock Landale stuff and his role, and it seems like it's going to be a really important one early on. How about G.G. Jackson, Jess, in this sense? If they go into the year, or let's just say first game October 22nd, and you've got Jock out there and you've got Santi, because maybe for the first couple of games, Jaren isn't ready to go. That'd be worst case in this case. And it feels like there's an opportunity, maybe, if that's the case, for G.G. Jackson, as whether maybe it is a backup four here to Santi, you know, to get involved early, to you know, coming off of a year that he's all said I had to mature from. This feels like an opportunity for him, and I'm asking you that if he better go ahead and seize it, because I'm concerned, and I wonder, are you, about him possibly getting lost in the shuffle? You have so many wings, one in Jalen Wills that you liked from last year, Cedric Cowart you're trying to get out there. I just worry that if G.G. doesn't grab a hold early, maybe of some open opportunity here, that perhaps he could get lost in the shuffle. What do you think about G.G.'s season?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think G.G. knows that. Talking with G.G. yesterday was probably top three conversations okay. I had. And from somebody that you find yourself rooting for, and the lessons that he's learned, the fact that he's 20 years old, he's the youngest player on this team still, even though he's going into his third year with the Grizzlies. It's kind of a remarkable thing. But at the end of the day, like, he's 20 years old. And I'm not trying to say that as an excuse. There's just a lot of runway still ahead. So even if this year for G.G. Jackson, it doesn't result in him being a primary piece of the rotation, that doesn't mean it's over for G.G., right? Like, this is still relatively fresh. And I think the thing that stood out to me the most from a headspace, and Zach Kleiman mentioned it yesterday in his remarks at the beginning of the day, and saying, like, everyone saw it. Everyone saw the frustration for G.G. last year and what he's learned from that. And we talked a lot about it in Summer League. But what G.G. told me is, I asked him, you know, favorite moment of your professional career so far. Is there a highlight or a game or just something that you'll remember forever? And he was really thoughtful with his answer. And he said, you know what? I could give you a game. I could give you a highlight, but that wouldn't be accurate. The most, you know, the biggest, best part of my career so far is when the Grizzlies sent me back down to the Hustle last year. And I had to learn about myself and further learn to be a professional and learn what it was going to take to get back onto that court. And I just thought it was a really insightful answer from someone who, again, is 20, and to be able to kind of take the ego out of it and really focus on the humility of, you know, something that didn't go as he expected or planned or wanted last year. And he's really embraced this coaching staff and front office's desire to have a path forward for him. Now, like you said at the beginning, he just has to be able to grasp it, right? Yep. Because it could come down to a numbers thing where if he's not ready and able now, well, there's enough alternative options as we get deeper into the season where they don't have to rely on someone who's not ready for this exact moment.
You know, I think in 2021, 2022, you're probably just kind of, you know, is it a three-year plan? Is it a four-year plan? I mean, I'm taking you back in time, but, you know, this is before you had to pay, you know, Desmond Bain. This is before you had to pay Santi Aldama, before you had to give Jaren, you know, the big new contract. I would imagine that given all of those constraints that were coming down the pike, 21, 22, they're like, all right, hey, we got 3 years. I know we're young, but, you know, let's try to maximize this. And then here we are, right? Like it has not been maximized for one reason or another. What kind of timeline do you think this franchise is on? Like, I think that's the part of this that I don't really know. Like, you try to weigh Desmond Bain and you have your reasons because of the money and you have to use it in different ways. But like, is this a long-term timeline? Is it a short-term timeline? Is it, we'll decide what timeline it is when we have to? Like, what's just sort of the MO right now for the Grizzlies in terms of, you know, the length of time for this?
Well, it's interesting. It doesn't directly answer like a dead set benchmark on what is the length of time. But I think their deadline, their timeline really is defined by their flexibility now, right? By moving on from Desmond Bane and being able to get Jaren's contract done, but then finding a lot of these younger pieces and having key pieces in place where if you're looking up at the trade deadline or the weeks leading up to the trade deadline and you think this team might be better than anticipated this year, might be able to contend this year. You have Ja, you have Jaren, maybe you're missing one key piece. You now have the flexibility where you could find yourself making one of those moves. That said, you also have the long-term flexibility of some of these younger players from Jalen Wells and Zach Edey last year to the hope of Cedric Coward. And I noticed that Javon Small was name dropped yesterday by Zach Kleiman when he talked about the improvement of ball handling across the board for this team and the most ball handling guards they've had in recent history. And he's going through Ty Jerome and Scottie Pippen Jr. And he said, and even Javon Small. So again, just the buy-in factor of the youth, which then contradicts a bit with the fact that you have your two premier players in their prime or entering their prime in Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. So I'm of the belief when you have players in their prime, you have to capitalize now. You can't have wasted seasons. Every season should be trying to go for it in some capacity. But I do think there's a general sense of understanding that the rest is still unwritten for this team this year, right? And until we see it start to play out, I don't think we're going to have a real true grasp of what those expectations should be.
Perhaps you can speak to this for me. I got the sense from the quotes, and you got to talk more directly to him, perhaps not about this, but maybe you did, that this changing of number, you know, for Jaren Jackson Jr. to 8, something I usually wouldn't care, about whatsoever, but to him is very important. To him is significant. Have you drawn that from him or in any direct talks with him about it, about this number switch and what it means to him?
So it's so funny because in my conversation with Jaren, and to kind of pull the curtain back, for each Grizz Files, I get 10 minutes with each player. So you're trying to cram a lot in a small period of time. And we just started riffing so much. I never even got to Jaren's number switch with him. And the interview ended, and I was like, oh, well, that's going to be something that stands out that wasn't included in Jaren's Grizz Files. But at the end of the day, I think what I can answer the question with is, just in terms of the continued evolution of Jaren, what stood out to me in our conversation was now perhaps more than ever before, and I'm not saying this wasn't the case before, I'm just saying it's exemplified now, he is exceptionally focused on basketball. Like, he always has his other entities, from the fashion to the music, mm-hmm. and he's always really interested about those things. He didn't want to talk about them at all. He wanted to talk about basketball. He wanted to talk about this team. He wanted to talk about his abilities in this league, his and Ja's abilities to lead this team, the hope of one day winning a championship and leaving an imprint on Grizzlies basketball, but also the city of Memphis. It was just, there was such a maturity to Jaren yesterday, and he's always a really good interview. Mm-hmm. It just felt like an elevation to that next step. And that's the thing that, when it comes to it, we talk about adding older veterans to this group and getting someone with championship pedigree like a KCP and a Ty Jerome and Jock or whatnot. John and Jaron are your vets now. Like, they're young vets, but they are veterans. And I did feel this semblance of understanding of that from both of them in a way that maybe began to trickle last season, but now you're kind of seeing it take a full effect as they both just appear to be very comfortable in themselves right now, but also very committed to taking this thing to the next level.
Yeah. Talking to Jessica Benson, she joins us every single Tuesday here on the show. Switching gears a little bit, Memphis football is 5-0 for the fifth time in program history. That's 110 years of history there, which makes this feel significant. I think we all kind of believe that after they beat Arkansas as 7.5 underdogs, even if Arkansas is obviously a tire fire, which they are, it felt like it said a lot that they were able to be resilient and come back and win that game. I don't know, just how special do you think the season can be? When you look out, I mean, is the jury still out because, South Florida and Tulane haven't come in here yet? I mean, just what's your evaluation today of Memphis football?
I mean, right now my evaluation is they have a chance for something special, and that won't change. Hopefully it will not change until that next big ticker in the schedule, which is South Florida coming on October 25th. And, I wish that I'd been at a point on Saturday where in the midst of a lot of really good games, I didn't feel the need to pay attention to Memphis FAU, but I did for a period of time. And shout out to Memphis, because this has been an identity for them. The second half takes off and they look like a much more productive football team and are able to get out of there with the 55-26 win. I very much look forward to the games against South Florida and Tulane, but I have allowed myself at this point in time, based on starting a season 5-0 and the just sheer difficulty of that happening, to believe that this could turn into something where we're sitting down at the end of the season and Memphis legitimately has a chance to be the representative of the non-power conferences in the college football playoff. Like, for now, for this moment in time, when you see the projections, you get to see Memphis included in that. So I think that's something to be celebrated.
Question of the day for me, it's one I'll probably ask to Jason Fitz, our 125 guest. I'm curious what you think. Is Ole Miss the best team in the SEC? And if not, who is?
Ooh, I like that question. I think based on direct coming off of the last weekend, I would be comfortable saying yes, but I would add a yes and, where it is perhaps Ole Miss has asserted itself, but Texas A&M is right behind there.
Yep.
And I have a growing confidence in Alabama. And I know this Alabama-Vanderbilt game coming up this weekend, it feels so goofy that we have College Game Day going to Alabama-Vanderbilt, but that is the state of the world right now, and Vanderbilt's just been hanging big numbers on people this season thus far, and now you'll have a big SEC matchup. But I think Ty Simpson is a little underrated, Alabama quarterback.
Yeah.
So I would kind of put it in this floating ring of Ole Miss, Texas A&M. Oklahoma's hard because of the injury to Mateer and how that continues to look. But the SEC is one of those conferences that does have the vibe this season especially, and I guess it's always the case now. It's evergreen. It just feels like you're going to eat itself alive because you have a lot of really good teams who have the chance to knock each other off every week.
You know what I hate about social media? This is what I hate about social media, because you brought up Alabama. So I do this show every Thursday for BetMGM Network, and they'll clip out, the stuff that they feel like might do well on social media, right? And in fairness, they post it before the game starts. So it's not like they wait. They post it before the game starts. And they posted this TikTok of me where I'm talking about the Alabama and the Georgia game. And I say, look, Alabama might be better than what they looked like against Florida State, but that ain't going to be enough. You're going to have to be a whole lot better than what you showed against Florida State to come close to beating Georgia in Athens. And so I said, give me Georgia all day. Of course, Georgia lost. They had every chance to win, but they lost.
Right.
And I'm getting worn out. There are 700 comments on this TikTok. There are 700. And But had I picked Alabama, right? Had I picked Alabama correctly, and I said, Alabama's going to do it. They're going to go in there and they're going to upset. Nobody would have commented. Nobody would have said anything. Nobody would have been like, oh, yeah, he was right. But because I was wrong and because I picked against Alabama, all of a sudden, it just becomes this, this huge explosion, and they can't wait to. I just hate social media in that way.
This is the plight of being a sports content creator or a content creator at all. I would give a suggestion: Just stop reading them.
Oh, I'm not worried. No, it's not about the reading. Actually, I know,
but it's just it's obnoxious. I understand how it goes.
You only get attention if you fall on your face in a way.
we had a perfect example of this, which you have to shift back a little while back. But coming off of week one in the NFL, the incredible J.J. McCarthy fourth quarter for the Vikings, where they're down, he's looking terrible. Everyone's saying, wow, the Vikings have wasted their future in J.J. McCarthy. And then he comes back and leads this crazy fourth quarter win. You have him telling the group, like, being down is exactly where you want to be, and his teammates, Justin Jefferson, saying the locker room believes in him. So there's a video of me just talking about J.J. McCarthy is a winner, right? And it did okay. But you want to know when it really took off? When they lose the next week to the Falcons.
That's right. Yep.
And J.J. McCarthy goes,
this girl's so dumb.
Like,
she don't know nothing.
Yeah, like, get back in the kitchen, this dumb bee, like, all that. And I'm just like, for one moment, everyone's like, yeah, you understand. You respect J.J. McCarthy. And then it's the people who find the video after. So, I mean, that's the case for all of this stuff. Like, we're wrong just as much as we're right. And it's not so much as wrong, but you're just going with the constant flow of information. So it is funny when that happens, though.
How do we change that, Jess? The stuff that you
see.
We
all get off social media.
Is that what it is? It's so far gone that it's us that has to be removed. There's no teaching of our kids that, look, man, women in sports is sports. Like that, this is something.
Oh, no, we're so far gone.
That old speech ain't going to work on this America, huh?
I don't think so. And I think the social media just perpetuates it to a pretty bad spot.
It does.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
we should be better. I hate that because I've heard Courtney talk about that, Courtney Cronin.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just disgusting of us.
Well,
it's crazy. I mean, I literally was having a conversation. This is just like TMI, but I was talking with a friend and I said, you know, I think the rate of times that I have been called a dumb B word, like how many times in my life have I been called that in comparison to someone who doesn't work in the sports media space? And then I like pulled myself out and I said, okay, well, then I have to think of me in comparison to like a Courtney Cronin or a Mina Kimes or a Laura Rutledge, like someone who is on a national big stage, and they get it like tenfold all day, every day. So, you know, we're all just out here taking the insults
with
stride.
I just hate that we as men probably pass it off too much, just kind of dismiss it. So, oh, that's their problem. You know, hey, girl, we just kind of dismiss it. It's not one of our problems because we don't have to face it. But maybe if we cared as much, right, or this is our problem because it's us that's putting this on them, maybe that's a way to change. I don't know. That's probably the deacon in me gesture.
I don't know either. But then it's also like, you know, like men are wrong too. And then just people are mean on the internet. So
that's the key right there.
Our insults are gendered, right? Like our insults typically come from a place of you're a woman, you're dumb, you're bad. Like insults to men just start at, you're dumb. I hate your opinion.
That's true.
You're bad at your job. So everyone's coming from the same mean place.
I also think we should not normalize this. Like, we should not normalize this behavior. I mean, but it feels like we sort of, as a society, have. Because we're just like, oh, it's just social media.
Part of the gig.
But, like, that's normalizing the behavior.
Somebody today had the note, and I actually found it interesting, and I cannot remember who it was, but someone on Twitter pointed out like the Ryder Cup from this weekend, right?
Yeah, yes.
And how there's
it was Dan Wolkin. Who it was.
What happened?
It was Dan Wolkin, and he brought up the concept of these people used to hide behind keyboards, and you used to be able to say like, you know, oh, they only say it online. They'd never say it to your face. And now that's elevated out where you're saying it online and you're saying it to people's face.
It's,
like a guy who was heckling
blending.
Rory posted a video of himself heckling Rory, like proudly
calling him the F
trying
word,
to say,
the
look
slur.
At me. Yeah. Yeah.
And so Dan's point is that people are so lost in this that they are blending what they feel like they can get away with online. Right. And they are now bringing it to the real world. It used to
because
there
you
used
can
to
get
be,
away with it in both places.
Well, he got kicked out, right? I mean, this guy got kicked out of. I assume he got kicked out of the because Rory asked for him to get kicked out because he said he called me this.
That's right.
There's no accountability. Like I can honestly say this, I don't comment mean things on content. You know, like I don't.
I don't think I ever have in my life.
I mean, maybe when I was like a child, I might have like trolled or something. But like, as
we didn't have, when I was a child, which is similar to when you were a child, like,
right.
We weren't in a place where we could troll. Like, I was on Twitter, I think my senior year in high school, but it was so rudimentary. Like, it wasn't this constant source of information and, like, churning of hate and trying to be a troll and whatever. I feel like that was something that developed for us, like, in our 20s more so. And by that point, you know, I was trying to work in this field. Like, I would never, like, hate post. That feels like it would have been a career ender back in the day.
Yeah, it's just, man, it's a crazy time, man. And I don't think at this point there's putting any toothpaste back in the tube. But, you know, I will raise my children not to leave me. Like, if you think about, like, leaving a mean comment to somebody, like, just don't. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's really easy not to do it.
See, that's so simple.
I'm not saying I'm perfect. Like, I'm sure I've gotten off some jokes on the show, like, you know, but I would never come to your, you know what I'm saying, doorstep anonymously with no accountability,
yeah.
You know, and do that. But I realize that everybody's not raised the same way. And anonymity, man, it's a powerful drug. It really, truly is. But
anonymity mixed with, strangely, the complete opposite end of the spectrum, like, star chasing or clout chasing,
yep.
I should say, because now there's like power in popping off on the internet.
Right. Absolutely.
And go viral.
But
exactly.
So one day you're not going to be anonymous, right? Like, you're going to say something and the privilege of anonymity is going to be stripped away from you. Like, that's going to happen. Like, if you say something, you know, nefarious enough or, you know, whatever enough, malicious enough, someone's going to find you.
They might find you, but like, what's going to happen?
Well, I mean, we cancel people these days, right?
And I don't necessarily, I don't know. I think we've kind of had a reverb, and I guess, whatever, that's a long, much longer conversation. But, you know, you do believe in free speech and the ability to say things, and then you get into the separation of free speech and hate speech and what that is. And then it just comes down to what I look at it is like, how do you want to be viewed as a person? And I think more and more people are being comfortable being viewed as a bully, as, you know, someone who like wants to fight everybody online or fight people verbally in real life. And that's become, once again, kind of like much cooler mm-hmm. than somebody who, doesn't fall into that trap of the back and forth of it.
We've kind of touched on this, but I was happy to see my coach Ben Johnson apologize for his behavior and the way he handled the halftime interview. I don't know
yes.
if you saw it, but he was real real snarky in terms of, he said he misheard or whatever, in terms of you got to make adjustments, right, or you got to be better. But it wasn't as much that, Jess, that stood out. I was watching when it happened. He stared her down after it, right? It was sort of that Maria Taylor, I think it was Saban. And that's what I'm saying.
Yes.
You guys are getting it from even the – it's not just us on social media and us fans. I mean, even in, you know, the way it's built into the sport, Ben Johnson staring her down.
I hate those interviews, too.
Yeah.
I genuinely hate those interviews. They're uncomfortable. They're for the 99% of the time, you're really not getting a whole lot of value there. And for what? For the opportunity to, like, have an awkward, at best, uncomfortable moment with a coach – that whole thing was rough. And then that got clipped where you only saw the small clip,
right,
that it made it look like she asked a dumb question, a probing question. But then when you saw in the extended, you saw kind of like the near joking manner between the two of them. And then he just snaps into the being mad about it.
Yep.
Anyway, I thought it was great that he apologized, because at the end of the day, these things just go stupid viral and people want to get their jokes off and their takes off. And like, these are just two people. So if they moved on from it, like, everyone else can too.
Yeah,
I
like it. I like that that tells me a lot about Ben Johnson.
100%, bro.
Me too.
Yeah.
Because I know he's feeling himself. The ego's up there. You're making $13 million. Everybody's crowned you beforehand. And I felt some of that in the way he stared her down when she's asking, hey, you were bad in the first half. You know, what adjustments you made? And I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah.
She came so professional. And so, yeah, I was glad to see that happen. Jess,
yeah.
you are the absolute best.
You guys are the best.
The Grizzophile, Jessica Benson. Don't ever change.
Get ready for him.
Thank you so much, Jessica.
See you guys.
Yep. That's Jessica Benson. Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot from him. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, you don't have to apologize. Like, was it like a little menacing? Was it a little over the top? Sure. I don't think it was one of those things where he was obligated to apologize, but he felt like he should. I don't know if he apologized so much as he said, I should have handled that differently, right?
Yeah.
And I just think that, just that acknowledgement, you know, that's what separates you as a person. You know, it's like I was feeling guilty about the way I handled that interaction, and I wanted to make sure that I vocalized it.
Yeah, I don't know that it was necessary. I just hope that of him, and I hope if, you know, I didn't, the phrasing, you're right, he may have not said, I'm sorry, publicly.
Right.
I hope he talked to her.
Right.
I hope he talked directly to her. Because, again, this is a woman who's, you know, been in the game, done it for years, she's not new to it, and to Jess's point, she's right, the value of these things in terms of what we get out of these coaches, you question it at all. But here's the thing, these coaches, whether it's college or NFL, know it's a part of it now. You know, in these big media deals that the NFL has and in college football, everything else, these interviews are a part of it. And so you know sometimes that losing coach, right, he's going to be in that situation. You've done enough of them now that you should be able to remain a professional. The point is, Ben did the right thing in setting it straight. Hey, I misheard her. I didn't handle that correctly. Hopefully apologize directly. That's just, I think, something you should do in that situation. So it made a lot of, Courtney Kroeder wrote a story about it, made a lot of news in Chicago because it stood out. And it reeked of ego, a guy who hasn't accomplished anything yet as a head coach.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad he tried to clear it up at least.
Yeah, absolutely right. So
when you're wrong, you should admit it. And you should apologize for it.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the way we get to be.
Now, I think, you know, she could, you know, I don't want to say apologize, but, like, she could learn some things, too, like, in terms of the way she phrased the question, in terms of the way that she, you know, I mean, there's just more, I think, delicate ways to handle the point that she was trying to get across.
She said, do you need to change what you're doing?
Yeah, yeah.
But I get it. But I mean, at the end, that's an adjustment question that you're typically going to get. I don't care. You know, they're all the same question.
Exactly.
Especially when you're losing.
Yep.
And it's how you're going to react to it. If you want to take a word out here or there or and say, well, this means something, this feels personal.
Yeah.
I think feel like that's more on you because these folks now are, you know, in this job. You can stare them down and make them feel small if you want to. But your job is to coach that team and to make the adjustments, not to get caught up in this stuff.
Yeah.
Which is a part of it.
Allen Robinson, I don't know if he ever played for Detroit. Maybe he did for a year. I don't know. But the former wide receiver tweeted that one thing Ben Johnson will always do is take accountability in all phases of the game.
I love that. I love that when he is wrong, he is willing to admit it, that he's wrong. That's a good sign. The best do. Did Nick apologize to Maria? You don't remember that exchange? I think it was Nick Saban shooting Maria down on a question, something like that. I wonder, did he? I'm just asking this off the top of my head. I don't know.
I don't remember.
Because that one was big. They even referenced it. Stephen A. was talking about that this morning as one of these situations.
Right.
You know.
He did apologize.
He apologized.
Yep.
Yeah. See? I think Nick deep down is that kind of dude. I wonder, I mean, this was back in 2018, if the school put pressure on him, whatever else. But I'd like to think he's that type that would admit the mistake, and he
called her.
Yeah, that's what you need to do.
Yeah, he called her and had a, yeah, that was the famous, so quit asking. Mm-hmm. That was the famous.
Oh, he came on down. And look at Maria now. Like, Maria's doing her job. She's continued to be elevated. She's on NBC.
Yep.
Like, that's a woman who was a professional, man.
Yep.
And you caught Nick in a mood. And that's what most of these coaches are in.
That's right.
When they're getting asked this same halftime question about adjustments.
Yep.
Like, just, you know, it should be routine by now.
Absolutely. So good on everybody involved. Yeah. All right, we'll come back with the rundown. Grizz Media Day, of course, yesterday. Monday Night Football last night. Lots more to come. Jason and John, 93.9 FM, ESPN.